ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन सीरीज ऑन द 11th कैंटो श्रीमद् भागवतम। We began the 11th canto in the previous episode, and in that episode we have covered the first 5 chapters, and today we will begin from the 6th chapter. In the first chapter of the 11th canto, we have seen how the sages headed by Narada Muni and Vishwamitra and others, they cursed the Yadu dynasty. So the young boys of the Yadu dynasty dressed Samba like a pregnant woman and brought that so-called pregnant woman in front of the sages and asked the sages, so please tell whether this woman will give birth to a boy or a girl. So seeing that mockery and mischievous behavior, the sages cursed that this so-called woman will give birth to a iron club, and that club would be the cause of the destruction of your dynasty. So then the young boys of the Yadu dynasty, under the instruction of Ugrasena, so they ground this iron club into small bits of powder and then threw the powder into the ocean. So after this, Vasudev, the father of Krishna, understood that very soon this Yadu dynasty is going to get annihilated, and the Supreme Lord Krishna is going to conclude his pastimes on this planet. So he was overwhelmed, and then he came to Narada Muni and requested him to enlighten him on the path of liberation. Then Narada Muni enlightened Vasudev by quoting a conversation that happened between Nimi Maharaj and Navayogendras. And Nimi Maharaj asked 9 questions on various subject matters, which are all centered on Bhakti Yoga. And each of the Navayogendras, the 9 sons of Rishabhadev, they answered the 9 questions of Nimi Maharaj. So we discussed all these topics yesterday. And in today's episode, we will discuss the meeting between the demigods and the Supreme Lord Krishna just before Krishna has concluded his pastimes. And after that, we will see Uddhava's feelings of separation from Krishna in the beginning chapters of Uddhava Gita. And prominently, we will discuss the episode of 24 Gurus today. So let's begin from the 6th chapter. In the 6th chapter of 11th canto, Sukadeva Goswami describes that the great devatas headed by Brahma, so they all came to Dwaraka one day. So Brahma and all the demigods went to the shore of Milk Ocean in the beginning of 10th canto, and they offered prayers to the Lord. Oh Lord, Mother Earth is overburdened by so many military forces, and she is being troubled by the demoniac kings there. So please descend and reduce her burden. So like that, the demigods headed by Brahma offered prayers to the Lord. So the Lord descended as Krishna. 125 years passed. And during this 125 years of Krishna's manifest pastimes, Krishna has reduced the burden of the earth himself, and also through his devotees, the Pandavas, in Kurukshetra war. And he himself, right from his childhood, he killed so many demoniac people, like Putana, Shakatasur, Aghasur, Bakasur, Vyomasur, Vatsasur, Arishtasur. So many such demons were killed by Krishna. And then later Krishna fought with Jarasandha's armies and Kalayavana's armies. And in this way, Krishna himself reduced the burden of the earth. And Balaramji reduced the burden of the earth. And Krishna's devotees, the Pandavas, reduced the burden of the earth. And Krishna was also accompanied by so many other Yadus, chief Yadu warriors. So in this way, Krishna has accomplished the purpose of his descent in a very effective manner. So now that Krishna has accomplished the purpose of the demigods headed by Brahma again descended to Dwaraka and requested Krishna, Krishna, now that you have accomplished our purpose, now you can go back to your abode if you like. So to say this, all the demigods came to Dwaraka. So the demigods saw the beauty, they came to Dwaraka Dham, and they saw the beautiful enchanting form of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and they brought divine garlands from the heavenly planets and offered those garlands to Krishna out of devotion and reverence, and they started offering their prayers. So first they pray, the demigods headed by Brahma offer prayers to the Lord. In the 7th shloka they say, Natasmate Natha Padaravindam Buddhindriya Pranamanovachobhihi Yachintayantar Hridi Bhava Yuktair Mumukshubhihi Karma Mayorupashat Natasmate Nathasa Te Natha Padaravindam. O Lord, we offer our respectful obeisances unto your Padaravinda, your divine transcendental lotus feet. Buddhindriya Prana Manovachobhihi means great yogis, they engage their buddhi, intelligence, indriya, senses, prana, life airs, mana, minds, to meditate on those divine lotus feet. And now we are very fortunate enough not only to have darshan of that lotus feet, to have the darshan of your entire transcendental body. Yogis meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord, but the demigods are not just meditating on the lotus feet, they are directly seeing, they are taking darshan of Krishna's entire form. They are not only seeing Krishna's lotus feet, they are also seeing Krishna's lotus face and interacting with him. So the demigods are, Brahmaji, on behalf of demigods, he is acknowledging their own good fortune of seeing Krishna, having Krishna's darshan. O Lord, you are the creator of the universe, maintainer of the universe, destroyer of the universe, and you are the master of three modes. All the three modes originate from your energies, you are still aloof. You are unaffected by those modes, and non-devotees cannot purify themselves by their knowledge or Vedic study or austerity, etc. But devotees can purify themselves by rendering service to you with devotion and with love. And the yogis aspire for many spiritual benefits, but devotees can easily cross over the material ocean just by taking shelter of your lotus feet, my Lord. So in these prayers, the demigods predominantly glorify Krishna's lotus feet prominently. And they also say that your lotus feet cause fear to the demons and fearlessness to the devotees. So Krishna can cause fearlessness to the devotees, but fear to the demons means Krishna is softer than a rose for devotees, Krishna is harder than a thunderbolt for demoniac people. So, and the demigods also glorify Krishna as Ashubhashaya Dhuma Ketu. Ashubha means inauspicious. Ashaya means aspirations or desires. Dhuma Ketu means destroying fire. So Krishna is described to be Ashubhashaya Dhuma Ketu, means he is the annihilating fire that can destroy all our negative qualities, bad intentions, material desires, and inauspicious proclivities. Krishna can completely smash all of them. So if you are being tormented by negative qualities like envy, pride, greed, lust, anger, etc., we need to take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna will act like fire that can burn away all these negative qualities into ashes. The demigods several times describe Krishna as Ashubhashaya Dhuma Ketu, and they also glorify him as time. O Lord, as time, you are the supreme controller, as Mahavishnu, you are the origin of Mahatattva and millions of universes. And although you are dealing with material energy, creating these material universes, still you are never entangled by material energy or material modes. So there is no material sense gratification in you. And there is no spiritual sense gratification also in that sense. Because Krishna has 16,108 queens, still Krishna is not inclined to gratify his senses. Yes, yendriyam vimathitum kuhakairna sekuhu. So the feminine attributes of all these queens will not disturb Krishna's senses in any way. So they cannot disturb Krishna's mind, and with their shy and smiling glances, Krishna is attracted to their devotional qualities. And in the 19th shloka, the demigods say, very beautiful shloka, they say, vibhyasta vamrtha katoda
उपस्पृशन्ति
तीर्थद्वयम्. The last line, if you see, They speak about Tirtha Dvayam. Tirtha means a holy place or holy river. Dvaya means two. So, demigods are speaking about two kinds of rivers in this shloka. So, one river is the Ganges river that emanates from the lotus feet of Krishna and descends and comes on the head of Lord Shiva and purifies even Shiva also. Shiva, Shiva is already auspicious. Shiva can become all the more auspicious by holding the water that washed Krishna's lotus feet on his head. So, there is one beautiful shloka in the third canto also. And the shloka says that Shivaha Shivo Bhut. So, that's a meditation on the Supreme Lord Krishna's divine lotus feet. Shivaha Shivo Bhut. Dhyatuhu Manaha Shaila Nisrishta Vajram. So, if you meditate on the lotus feet of Krishna, that meditation can act like a thunderbolt that can destroy the mountain of our sin. And those lotus feet are the source of the Ganges river that can purify even the three worlds, and also those waters of Ganga are held with great devotion on the head by Lord Shiva. So then Padavane, Padavaneja Saritaha Shamalani Huntum. Padavaneja means that which is born of Krishna's feet. Sarita. Sarita means this river, that is Ganges river. So Shamalani Huntum, that can completely destroy all sinful activities. So that is one river, that is Ganges river emanating from his feet. There is another river, that is the river of Krishna Katha. So Ganges can remove all sinful reactions from us, but the river of Krishna Katha can remove all sinful propensities from us. So these are two rivers, Krishna Katha river and Ganga river. So Krishna Katha emanates from Krishna's mouth in the form of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna Katha also emanates from devotee's mouth in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are two kinds of Krishna Kathas. And the other river, Krishna's Ganges river, that emanates from Krishna's lotus feet. So both are purifying. Then finally, after glorifying Krishna in various ways, Lord Brahma requested Krishna, Krishna, you have descended on this earthly planet and performed several pastimes for 125 years. So, and you have killed so many demons, you have reduced the burden of the earth, you protected your devotees, and you have established dharma, you have accomplished so many things on behalf of demigods. Now, there is nothing more for you to accomplish on our behalf, my dear Lord. If you so desire, you can go back to your divine abode. We invited you to this earthly planet to rectify the situation here, but now that you have done it, if you like, you can go back. So, and please give us this blessing that may we always be devoted unto your lotus feet. Always. So they said like this. So then Krishna said, yes, I understand your request. I am also thinking of winding up my pastimes. So I will definitely disappear. I will go back to my abode soon. But before doing that, I want to dispatch my Yadu dynasty also. So Yadus have to go away from this planet, because yesterday also we discussed that Yadus are so many, hundreds and thousands of Yadus are there. Just to educate these Yadus, Yadu princes, 38 million gurus were employed. So Yadus are, Yadu dynasty is so huge. So Krishna said that I will first dispatch them first, then I will disappear also. And I have already begun the process. Through the curse of the Brahmanas, these Yadus will be destroyed. So within 1 week, all the Yadus will be annihilated. After that, I will also disappear. So Krishna also had planned how much time is left before he goes back to his abode. So then, after dispatching these demigods, Krishna came to the Yadus and said that, oh my dear Yadus, we have been cursed by great sages and Brahmanas. So that's why we are seeing so many bad omens and inauspicious omens in Dwaraka Dham. So now we have to purify ourselves by performing some rituals. So let us go to a holy place called Prabhasa Kshetra. So we will go to Prabhasa Kshetra and then perform rituals and give charity to Brahmanas and do some sacrifices, and we will purify ourselves because we have been cursed by the sages. So Krishna inspired them, and all the Yadus said, yes, we will go to Prabhasa Kshetra. So Prabhasa Kshetra is a holy place, but what can be a better holy place than the Dwaraka Dham? So Krishna is staying in Dwaraka Dham and telling his Yadus that we will go to another holy place. So the reason is that whoever gives up one's body in the eternal abode of Krishna Dwaraka will go to the spiritual world. But many Yadus, as we discussed yesterday, many Yadus are not the eternal associates of Krishna. They are not supposed to go to spiritual world right now. Many of these Yadus are the portions of the demigods who appeared as Yadus. So now these Yadus have to go back to their positions as demigods in the heavens and continue their service in the universal administrative system. So the demigods also descended along with Krishna. Now the demigods should go back to the heavens, not to the spiritual world right now. They still have some service in this world. But whoever goes or gives up body in Dwaraka, they will go to spiritual world. So Krishna brought all these Yadus, especially the demigod portions of the Yadus, he brought them out of Dwaraka and brought them to Prabhasa Kshetra, and from there he had sent them to the spiritual, sent them to heavenly planets. But the eternal associates of Krishna, they remained in Dwaraka Dham, and after 1 week, Dwaraka will be covered by the ocean, will be inundated by the oceanic waters. Then all these eternal associates of Krishna will go to the spiritual world, eternal dham of Dwaraka. So like that, the Yadus are divided into two. One, the demigod portions. Second, the eternal associates. Eternal associates remained in Dwaraka. Demigod portions came to Prabhasa Kshetra. So Krishna is proposing all this. We will discuss this in detail in the last episode. But now Krishna just inspired them to come to Prabhasa Kshetra. Then all the Yadus have made up their minds. Meanwhile, Uddhava, the cousin of Krishna, who is very dear to Krishna, who has a form similar to Krishna, who wears dresses and garments left by Krishna, that Uddhava, he came to Krishna and said, "Krishna, I can understand that you are planning to depart from this world. You are planning to go back to your eternal abode. But I cannot live without you, Krishna. Please allow me also to come to your eternal abode. I will also accompany you. You are going back, please take me also." Not that Uddhava wants liberation. Uddhava is not like a jnani. So Uddhava is a devotee who is aspiring to render service to Krishna. If Krishna goes back to his abode, Uddhava will miss the opportunity to render service to Krishna. That's why Uddhava said that, "Krishna, I cannot live without you. Please take me along with you. So I cannot even bear half a moment of separation from you, Krishna." Yasya kshana viyogena loko hyapriya darshanah uktena rahito hyesha mritakah prochyate yatha. Even one moment of separation from Krishna can render all universes into void, and all these universes will appear devoid of life like dead bodies. That's the extent to which a devotee feels separation from Krishna. So Uddhava says that, "I cannot bear separation from you even for half a moment. I cannot bear separation from the opportunity to render service to your lotus feet. Please take me along with you." And Uddhava further says that people forget all their desires by hearing your pastimes. 44th shloka says, "Tava vikriditam Krishna drinam paramamangalam karanapi yushamasadhya jajanti anyaspraham janaha tava vikriditam Krishna." So tava vikriditam Krishna means, "Oh Krishna, your divine pastimes." Vikriditam means very playful pastimes. Drinam paramamangalam. Drinam means the humanity. Parama mangalam. Mangalam is auspicious. Parama is supreme. So your pastimes will cause the supreme auspiciousness to the entire human society, my dear Krishna. You have descended on this planet and you performed pastimes for 125 years. All these pastimes are so auspicious for the human society. Not only the human society that lived during Krishna's time, the human society that is living now also, and that's going to live for the rest of the creation of Brahma also. So now Krishna performed pastimes for 125 years, 5000 years back. Now also we are recounting those pastimes, we are discussing those pastimes, and by discussing Krishna's pastimes, there is auspiciousness for all of us also. So tava vikreditam krishna ranam paramamangalam. So Krishna's pastimes, discussion of Krishna katha, is the supreme cause of auspiciousness for all of us. So he says karana piyusham asadya. So they are nectar to our ears. Then tyajanti anyaspraham janaha. People can easily give up their attachment to material things and anything other than Krishna katha by hearing Krishna, Krishna's pastimes. So Uddhava says like this. And further Uddhava says, tvayopabhukta sraggandha vaso lankara charchitaha uchishta bhojino dasaha tava mayam jayemahi. Tvayopabhukta sraggandha, tvaya upabhukta means that which is enjoyed by you. Srag gandha, srag means garlands that are used by Krishna. Gandha means sandalwood pulp that is applied to Krishna. Tvayopabhukta sraggandha vasa, garments. Alankara charchitaha, so many other decorations and necklaces and helmets and many other things. So Krishna is dressed and decorated and served by his devotees in various ways. We serve the deities, we offer them dresses, we offer them ornaments, we offer them garlands, we offer them food, lot of bhoga. So devotees worship. So he says that uchishta dasino bhogaha means dasaha, the devotees of Krishna accept the remnants of Krishna in the form of either prasadam. Prasadam means eating the food items, or the other items which are used by Krishna are also prasadam. Garland, mahaprasadam garlands, or sandalwood pulp, or anything that Krishna has used. So tava mayam jayemahi, by accepting them one can conquer maya. So we cannot take Krishna's tadiya cheaply. The garlands used by Krishna, the food eaten by Krishna, offered to the deities, and the tulasi leaves offered to the deities, the flowers offered to the deities, and the scent offered to the deities, the sandalwood pulp offered to the deities. So when we accept them and honor them, we can conquer maya. We can gradually come out of the influence of maya. So one cannot take any of these items that we do in our morning program cheaply. Uddhava says this because Uddhava, who else can say that? Uddhava is accepting the garments of Krishna. Uddhava is accepting the garlands of Krishna. Uddhava is accepting the remnants, food remnants of Krishna. So if one accepts the things paraphernally offered to Krishna, one can conquer maya. So then he says, devotees, by chanting and remembering and glorifying your deeds, we can overcome this ignorance easily. So that completes 6th chapter. Now we will enter the 7th chapter. So now Krishna says, yes, Uddhava, you have identified correctly. I am planning to conclude my pastimes in this world, and I will go. And after my departure, you should not stay here, because Kali Yuga is going to come very soon, and you are a pure devotee. You are pure in your thoughts and actions and body, mind and words. So for such pure people, Kali Yuga is not suitable. So you should not stay here. So now that Brahmanas have cursed the Yadu dynasty, in 1 week, in 7 days, Dwarka Dham will be inundated by ocean, and the Yadus will also fight with each other, quarrel with each other, and they destroy each other, and the Yadu dynasty will be annihilated, and I will also conclude my pastimes. So you should also not stay here. So you should maintain equal vision while wandering here. So, but Uddhava also said the same thing, that yes, I will not stay here, I will come along with you. But Krishna says that yes, you can come along with me, come to the spiritual world, but not now. You have to stay here, not for long time, for some amount of time you have to stay. Because Krishna, during his manifest pastimes, he gave his association to Vrindavan Vasis, Mathura Vasis, Dwaraka Vasis, Kundinapur Vasis, Swarga Vasis, then Sutala residents, and Mithila also he went. We discussed in the last episode of 10th Canto. Like that, Krishna went to several places and met so many devotees. But one place he missed, one important place, that is Badrikashram. So Krishna did not go to Badrikashram. In Badrikashram, there are so many exalted sages who are performing austerities and worshipping the Lord. So now that time for Krishna's departure has come, so now Krishna feels that I have to go back to spiritual world, but I didn't visit Badrikashram. So who will go on my behalf? Uddhava can go. So Krishna will now teach Uddhava, Uddhava Gita. Means he gives 23 chapters of long philosophical teachings to Uddhava, enlightens Uddhava, and he expects Uddhava to go to Badrikashram and give the teachings of Krishna to the sages of Badrikashram. That's the service meant for Uddhava. So Uddhava should do that service. Uddhava has to stay back for some time. After doing that service, he can go back to the spiritual world, but not right now. So why is it so? It's Krishna's plan, it's Krishna's will. We cannot question Krishna. Krishna wanted to go back. And he could have gone to Badrikashram and given the teachings personally, but he wanted to give that credit to Uddhava, because Krishna considers Uddhava non-different from him. He's as good as me. He can exactly represent me properly in front of the sages. So in this way, Krishna empowered Uddhava. So right now, Krishna is going to teach Uddhava Gita to Uddhava from this chapter, from the 7th chapter till 29th chapter. And after that, Krishna will plan for departure. So now, the first teaching that Krishna is going to give Uddhava is, "Oh Uddhava, I am going to speak to you about the vision of a pure devotee." A pure devotee definitely is attached to Krishna, but what would be his perspective towards the material world? He is so detached. So we should maintain a vision of detachment and equality towards this material world. So, on the material plane, there could be some happiness and distress, heat and cold, so many dualities are there. We should maintain equanimity. We should tolerate them. We should maintain equanimity and detachment towards all these things. So, maintain equal vision. So, on what is the basis of that equal vision? How can somebody see happiness and distress in an equal way? So, there is equality between happiness and distress also. What is that? Both are temporary in this material world. So one should not be so overexcited when there is cause for happiness. One should not be so depressed or disheartened or discouraged or devastated when there is distress. So one should maintain an equal vision to both, because this distress is not permanent, this happiness is also not permanent. Both are temporary, both are material. So in that sense, it is equal. So from a material perspective, they are different, they are opposite. Happiness and distress are opposite. You see the equality between them. Both are temporary phases. So it cannot stay for a long time. I should not be so overwhelmed. I should not be affected by it. After all, I am not a material person. I am not this material body. This happiness or distress is meant for only this material body. The spirit soul is always happy, Satchidananda. So you should have that spiritual vision. And from that spiritual perspective, you should see all the material happenings from an equal, in a equal mind. So you should have controlled mind. When you have such a controlled mind, then you are endowed with jnana, means knowledge, spiritual knowledge, vijnana, realization of that spiritual knowledge. So then you will be able to perceive yourself in a proper manner, that you are spirit soul, not the material body. Then the mind is satisfied and one can become dear to all the living entities. And one will never be hampered by any disturbance in one's life. So now Uddhava says, Krishna, you just said simply that I have to maintain an equal vision. You have given that instruction. But how will I be able to accomplish this instruction? How can I adopt this principle of renunciation which is meant for sannyasis? I'm not a sannyasi. But Krishna is speaking on the spirit of renunciation more than the order of renunciation. Renunciation is not in the dress or the symbols. Renunciation is in the spirit. So now when Uddhava asked like this, Uddhava said that, please instruct me, how can I accomplish your instruction? I am so much overwhelmed with conceptions of I and mine. But actually Uddhava is not overwhelmed with conceptions of I and mine. Means aham mameti. Means thinking in terms of myself, my own body. People who are so self-obsessed, they will think, they will see everything from the vision of aham mameti conception, I and mine. So Uddhava is not like that, but representing a common man, Uddhava is asking these questions for our benefit. And Krishna is giving these teachings to Uddhava and through Uddhava to all of us. So now Uddhava says, oh Krishna, you are the perfect master and perfect teacher. Only you can teach us how to maintain such a detached vision. In the 18th shloka, Uddhava says, Tasmad bhavanta manavadyam anantaparam sarvagnam ishvaramakuntha vikuntha dhishnyam nirvinna dhiraha muhe vrijinabhitapto narayanam narasakham sharanam prapadye. This is a beautiful shloka spoken by Uddhava in response to Krishna's instruction. He says, you are the perfect master. Tasmad bhavantam anavadyam anantaparam. Anavadyam, you have absolutely no inabilities. You have absolutely no shortcomings in your character. You are perfect in all respects. Tasmad bhavantam anavadyam. Second is anantaparam. Ananta, there is no end. Anantapara, there is no end in time. There is no end in space. Means Krishna is present in all times, past, present and future. And Krishna is present in all places. It's not that Krishna is there here, say in Mumbai. He's not there in another place, Delhi. He's there in Mumbai also, he's there in Delhi also, he's there in India also, he's there in America also, he's there in earth also, he's there in heaven also, he's there in material world also, he's there in spiritual world also. So Krishna is Anantaparam. He's all pervading through all phases of time and throughout all the places in the entire cosmic manifestation. Tasmad bhavanta manavadya manantaparam sarvagnam. Krishna is sarvagna, means he knows everything. He is omniscient. And an important observation here is, as indicated by Acharyas, sarvagna means he knows everything, means he knows everything that we do. When we render some service to Krishna knowingly or unknowingly, Krishna knows that. One should not doubt, I am making so many offerings to the deities of Krishna. No one is noticing me. No one is acknowledging me. But Krishna is acknowledging. Krishna is noticing. Okay. So, and sarvagna also indicates that Krishna is grateful. Because he knows every single service done by his devotees, Krishna becomes grateful to those devotees and he reciprocates with them out of his gratitude. Krishna has everything. Why should he become grateful for our simple offerings of patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam? But still, Krishna is grateful. So, sarvagnam also indicates Krishna has the quality of kritagnata. Sarvagna means he knows everything. Kritagnata means krita. He does something because he remembers what we have done for him. So, kritagnata. So, remembering the favors that we receive and reciprocating through the favors is kritagnata. So that is expression of gratitude. So sarvagnam Ishwaram, he is the supreme controller. Sarvagnam Ishwaram akuntha vikuntha dhishnyam, he always stays in his eternal abode. So each of these words are very elaborately explained by Acharyas. Just to elaborate on this one shloka, we may need an hour. So we are just giving a summary of this shloka. So nirvinna dhira hamuhe vrijina abhitapto. Nirvinna dhir means in a mode of detachment. Ahamuhe vrijina abhitapto. I am offering obeisances to you. I am taking your shelter in a mode of detachment. And also abhitapta. Vrijina abhitapta means being tormented by distresses. So after describing Krishna's qualities in various ways, Uddhava says that I am in distress and I am in detachment. So undergoing lot of distresses in this material world should induce a quality of detachment in us, and in that mood of detachment we should surrender unto Krishna. That's what Uddhava is doing. Right? Narayanam Narasakham Sharanam Prapadya. I take your shelter. Oh Narayana, oh Narasakha, I take your shelter. So Uddhava glorified Krishna in this way, and he wanted to understand how can one develop that detached vision. Because in this world, people are overwhelmed with a desire for sense gratification. How can they cultivate detachment? So Krishna responds to Uddhava's question by saying that by using common sense, by using intelligence, you can understand the temporary nature of this material world, and thus you can be detached. You can become your own guru. So your intelligence can act as your guru, and you can understand so many lessons by observing the natural phenomena in this material world, by logic, by perception, by intellectual analysis, directly or indirectly. You can gather a lot of knowledge and realization. So thus you can become your own guru. Of course, although Krishna is saying that you can become your own guru or your intelligence can become your own guru, your own common sense can become your own guru, that does not eliminate the need for a bona fide Vaishnava guru. So, if with my intelligence, if I can understand so much, if I go and surrender to another intelligent person who is more intelligent than me, how much more can I learn? So thus, this 24 Gurus episode does not eliminate the need for a bona fide Vaishnava Guru and the Sangha of Vaishnavas. We will discuss further. So now Krishna says that, my dear Uddhava, I will tell you one story. Once this Yadu Maharaj met a Brahmana. He is an Avadhut Brahmana. Avadhuta means who is not aligned with any social customs or other principles or obligations or rules and regulations. He is in his own style. Means because he is so advanced spiritually, he need not align himself with any social customs or other rules and regulations. So, Yadu Maharaj once met such an Avadhut Brahmana and he went and asked him, "Oh Brahmana, you seem to be very satisfied and happy. Although you are capable of doing some work, you are not doing any work. But still you are feeling so happy. So may I know, how did you gather your knowledge and realization? Why are you so happy?" So then this Brahmana started responding to Yadu. He says that, "I have so many gurus and I have learned lot of knowledge from those gurus." So, actually Brahmana is considering so many elements in this world as his guru. So, he says, "Earth is my guru, water is my guru, sky is my guru, then snake is my guru, a small child is my guru, a moth is my guru, a deer is my guru, an elephant is my guru." So, like that, so many living and non-living objects, moving and non-moving entities are considered by this Brahmana as guru. But not that this elements of the nature or these people have actually sat in front of this Avadhut Brahmana and given him some teachings. That's not the point. So, by his own intelligence, this Brahmana acquired some lessons from these elements of nature with his own intelligence, and thus he considered them his gurus. So, he says, "Atmano gururatmaiva purushasya visheshataha." So, one can become one's own guru by careful observation and analysis. So now, let us see what this Avadhut Brahmana learnt from his 24 gurus. The first guru, so that gurus are, you can see that list, the five elements are gurus: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Five gurus. Next, sun, moon and ocean are other gurus. Then flies and insects are also gurus. They are moth, honeybee, spider and wasp. And birds are there: pigeon and hawk. Then animals, python, then elephant, deer, fish, snake, they are all gurus of this Avadhut Brahman. Then honey thief, pingala, a prostitute, a small child and a young girl and an arrow maker are the gurus. So total 24 gurus are there. There is one additional guru, 25th guru, that is one's own human body. So well, let us see what this Avadhut Brahman has learned from these 24 gurus. First guru is earth. So from earth, this Avadhut Brahmana has learned the quality of tolerance and dedication. So, what does earth do? Earth gives all kinds of natural resources and facilities to the living entities who are living on her surface. Although there are so many atomic explosions and pollution, deforestation, warfare, falsehood amongst the people. So, but still, earth is tolerating all these human beings and other living entities living on her surface, although they are doing all these things, and earth is continuing to provide all necessities to them. So similarly, a sadhu, a saintly person, a gentleman, so he derives this lesson from this earth that we have to tolerate. So one has to tolerate, my aggressors are acting helplessly under the influence of higher control, so I should not be distracted. Sometimes one may have to teach a lesson, one may have to deal with a person who causes some distress to us, but internally one should never maintain any grudge or envy or hatred towards that person. So one should learn the quality of tolerance from earth. But of course, in the name of tolerance, one should not allow oneself to be exploited by others. But at the same time, in the name of dealing with a person who exhibits some misbehavior, one should not develop any hatred or grudge towards other people. So one should help others transform their consciousness, but at the same time, one should not maintain any grudge towards them. So one should tolerate internally and externally also to various degrees according to the time, place and circumstances. So the quality of tolerance is taught by Mother Earth. Basically, with his own intelligence, Daudhut Brahmana learned the quality of tolerance from Mother Earth. So on Earth, there are so many mountains. So now you see from these mountains, you learn the quality of dedication from these mountains. Means mountains offer so many valuable things to common people. So now you go to a mountain, there are so many waterfalls that can sustain various forms of life. And so many rivers flow from the mountains. So in this way, mountains cause a lot of welfare to common people. So you can learn the quality of dedication from those mountains. Then next, another element of the earth only is tree. So the trees also teaches the quality of dedication to others. You can see in that picture, a person is just sleeping under the tree. So although the tree tolerates heat and cold and rain, so tree gives us shade, flowers, fruits, firewood, and so many other benedictions are given by the trees to us. So trees are very selfless. Even if somebody takes a stone and throws on the tree only will give us a fruit or a flower. So trees are completely selfless. We can learn the quality of being selfless to from the trees. And the trees don't protest even if they are cut down or dragged away. So they completely dedicate themselves for the welfare of others. From the wood of the tree, we can make a lot of furniture. So we should learn from trees also. So basically, Mother Earth teaches the quality of dedication and tolerance. So mountain and tree are part of Mother Earth. So all these are considered one guru only. So that's first guru is Earth. And the earthly elements like mountain and tree are also mentioned within this guru only. The second guru is air or wind. So that air is of two types. Internal air, which is called pranavayu. So from that pranavayu, we can learn the quality of satisfaction. We should be satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. So pranavayu is not so huge. So it's there within the body only and just circulates within the body only. So that is that teaches us the quality of satisfaction, the internal air. But externally also there is a lot of air, that is wind. So now you see the windmills are there and so much of winds will come, breeze will come to give us a soothing sensation, and the wind will come and then instigate the clouds to pour rains in monsoon. So like that, there is external air, there is internal air. Internal air teaches us satisfaction, external air teaches us detachment. So now this wind, you can see that picture, there are three pictures there. Air passes through a place where there are waterfalls. Then that air, that wind carries small particles of water, sprinkles of water, and when we stand close to that waterfall, that sprinkles of water are carried by the wind to our body, and especially if it is summer, we have a very soothing sensation. Now the wind also passes through a beautiful garden, as you are seeing in the picture. Then that wind carries lot of fragrance of different flowers and brings it to our nostrils and gives a very pleasant sensation to our nose. Then the wind sometimes may pass through forest fire. So then that wind causes a lot of heat to us. In this way, wind may pass through waterfalls or gardens or forest fire, but the wind is not attached to anything. Wind is not disturbed by anything, by this ambience. So now, you can see in the next picture, the wind is also fearless. So wind does not choose to stay in one place only. Wind just blows everywhere, on the top of mountains also. So but we go on top of mountain, we may feel little fearful that we may fall from that cliff. But the wind is not fearful. So we can learn the quality of fearlessness from wind. And wind is very peaceful and unattached. And sometimes wind may blow violently, and when a lot of wind comes, so many particles may just, dust particles may come up. But still, wind does not mix with anything or become attached to anything. So wind does not blow only in places where there is where there are nice gardens. Okay, when there is garbage, wind will not blow there. Not like that. Wind will go to different places, but wind is unattached to any of these places and unmixed with those places. Similarly, the soul may be entrapped in the gross material body or subtle material body. Gross body is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Subtle body is made of mind, intelligence and ego. And the soul is within that body. You can see that picture. So now the soul, although it is entrapped in two kinds of material bodies, soul should remain detached. That is good for the soul. The living entity should be detached from all these bodily comforts or dualities that are experienced by the subtle body. So just, we should learn the quality of the detachment from wind or air. So that's the second guru. First guru is earth. Earth teaches us dedication and tolerance. And second guru is wind or air that teaches us the qualities of satisfaction and detachment. Then third guru is sky. So sky is everywhere. Ether is everywhere. It's spread all over the place, all over the universe. But the sky doesn't mix with anything. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, is all pervading. You can see in that picture, he is staying in the hearts of every single living entity. But still, he is unaffected. Although he is all pervading, he is unaffected. The living entity undergoes a lot of distresses and difficulties, but the Lord himself is aloof. Similarly, the soul also may pass through different bodies, from childhood body to a youthhood body, then old body, but still the soul is intact. There is no old age for the soul. There is only old age for the body. Old age, death and birth and dwindling, all these stages are there for the material body, but the soul is intact. So, that comparison is given. Sky doesn't mix with anything, and the sky is unaffected by anything. Similarly, the soul's quality is never lost. The super soul's quality is also never lost. Then fourth guru is water. So water has so many qualities. So water is purifying. So when we become very dirty, when our body becomes dirty by going into agricultural fields or by traveling outside, then no other substance can clean us. We cannot bathe with oil. We cannot bathe with any other liquid substance or solid substance. Only when we bathe with water, clear water, then we are considered clean and it's refreshing. So water is purifying. Pure water is freed from all contamination. Okay. Similarly, saintly person also should be pure like water and purifying like water. So saintly person purifies by anyone who comes in contact. Just like when our body becomes dirty, when we bathe with water, we are purified. Our body becomes purified. Similarly, a pure devotee also can purify the consciousness of other people. Water purifies the body, but a saintly person purifies the consciousness. Then, another quality of water is transparency. Water is very transparent. Clear water is very transparent. Similarly, a pure devotee is very transparent. There is no diplomacy, there is no duplicity, there is no cutting corners, there is no backbiting or backstabbing. So a devotee is very transparent in one's dealings with others. So when in the transparent heart of such a sincere, pure devotee, the Supreme Lord manifests. And water also makes a pleasant sound. You stand on the shore of a water body or a flowing water or a waterfall, then it makes a very pleasant sound. Similarly, a devotee makes the pleasant sound of glorifying Krishna. What can be more glorifying, what can be more pleasant than the name of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna? A devotee makes such pleasant sounds. He always chants Hare Krishna and he always glorifies Krishna and he speaks about Krishna's seva. Fifth guru is fire. So we have seen four gurus till now. We have seen water, earth, fire and sky. Now we will see the fifth guru, fire. So fire glows and it shines Similarly, a devotee also shines by the power of one's austerity. When we take up some voluntary inconvenience upon ourselves for our purification, then we glow, then we shine. So austerity is the glow of a saintly person or a devotee. And fire is also undisturbed. Huge fire is there and it will not be disturbed by anything. So similarly, the consciousness of a sincere devotee is also not shakable. It's unshakable by any kinds of distractions. And fire can burn even contaminated substances also. So even if you throw contaminated substance in fire, it can just burn. Similarly, a devotee can purify anything that comes in contact with him, and he is not affected by any contamination outside or any contaminated food also. His consciousness will not get affected. And if we don't handle fire properly, it can burn our hands. Similarly, if we don't deal with devotees properly, we may be affected by aparad or offenses to those devotees. Next. Fire is sometimes concealed and sometimes open, sometimes revealed. You see, sometimes fire is concealed in the wood, right? So in traditional stoves, so where people cook with firewood, so fire is there inside, but externally there is a layer of ash. You think that it's ash, and then you touch, and then you burn your hand. So fire is sometimes concealed and sometimes open. Similarly, a devotee also may speak the glories of the Lord very openly sometimes in the midst of devotees, and sometimes he is concealed also. So we have seen the qualities of Madhyamadhikari in the previous episode, where he does prema, maitri, kripa, upeksha. So he, a devotee, speaks Krishna katha to innocent people and sincere people. But if some people are very inimical towards God, and devotee may restrain himself, he may not be speaking to them because they may become even more envious, so he will just stay away from them. So, and devotee, just like fire burns all inauspicious things, fire is considered very pure, devotee also can always burn inauspicious tendencies. Next, sixth guru is the moon. So, moon undergoes various phases in the sky. You see, on a Pauranami day, on a full moon day, so the moon is complete. But on an Ashtami day, or Navami day, or Dashami day, or Saptami day, or Panchami day, the moon is only partially visible. So, now these are all various phases of moon. Moon is not affected, but our vision is affected. That's why we are seeing like this. Similarly, the soul is complete, but the soul manifests in various bodies, like a human body, devata body, or animal body, or a bird body. But the soul is unaffected by being in different bodies. So similarly, the moon is not affected, our vision is affected, depending on which day we are seeing the moon. So also the reflection of the moon is present in various objects, various water bodies. So now the moon is reflected in a water body in which red color is mixed, the moon appears red. Now we mix green color in that water, then the moon appears greenish. So, but the moon is brightly shining, emanating white light, golden light in the sky. Similarly, the soul is also pure, but when the soul is entrapped within a material body, then the soul seems to manifest various qualities, but the soul is always pure. So, seventh guru is the sun. So, sun evaporates water from the earth. We have discussed in the 10th canto, 20th chapter also, in the monsoon of Vrindavan description. So then sun evaporates water from earth, and during the monsoon, sun gives back that water to the earth only. So sun teaches us the quality of detachment and no proprietorship. Although he only has extracted water by evaporating, he is not holding that water with himself. He is releasing that water back to the earthly beings. So one should learn that quality of not assuming oneself to be proprietor so much. So a sadhu may get so many things, from other people, but he will not hold all those things. He, when he finds some other needy person, he will just give it to them. So, sadhu is not just a mendicant. Any gentleman or gentlewoman, any good person can be called a sadhu. Any sincere person can be called sadhu. So, a sincere person and a noble person and a devotee is not entangled because he does not have a sense of proprietorship. He does not hold on to things. He does not have the quality of being possessive. That possessiveness is not there. Although he may have possessions, he is not possessive. So, he keeps certain things as much as it is needed. And whatever he doesn't need, he can just give it to others. Then sun is reflected in multiple objects. You keep say 10 pots filled with water, and sun's reflection can be seen in these 10 pots. So, but sun is not divided, he is one. Similarly, the soul also may appear in different bodies, but the soul is not divided. The soul is one and the same. And sometimes sun in the sky is overcast with clouds. At that time, we cannot see sun properly. But still we can make out that it is daytime, not nighttime. Why you are not seeing sun? How can you say that it is day? Because sunshine is visible through these clouds. Although thick, dark clouds are covering the sun, still sunshine is still seen. Similarly, like we cannot perceive sun when the sun is covered with clouds. Similarly, when our mind is filled with lot of speculations and unnecessary intellectual analysis, then we cannot perceive the Lord properly. We cannot see Him. So now, but although the sky is overcast with clouds and sun is not visible, still we can see the sunshine, as we discussed sometime back. Similarly, an intellectual person, his mind is filled with lot of speculations about God. He cannot see God properly, but still he is contemplating on God. At least he will understand the effulgence of the Lord. He may end up in Brahman if his contemplation is contemplating on God. So the highest manifestation or highest realization of sun we can have when clouds are present is his sunshine. Similarly, the highest realization that a jnani or a speculator can have about God is his effulgence, that is Brahman. He cannot see personality of Godhead Bhagavan, but he can see Brahman. He can realize Brahman. Then eighth guru is Pisian. So Pisian also teaches us the quality of detachment. Means Pisian, because of undue attachment to family, a Pisian may lose his life. So here the Dattatreya, Avadhut Brahman, who is actually Dattatreya, he speaks a story. Once there was a male Pisian and the female Pisian. So the Pisian, male Pisian is caught by a hunter, but the female Pisian is sitting there and then lamenting for her husband so much, not taking any measure to protect her own life. So meanwhile, the hunter shot this female bird also, and the female bird also lost their life. So Pisian represents overindulgence in sense gratification, and secondly, over attachment to partner. So if one is unduly attached to the opposite gender, one can lose one's life also, as the Pisian does. So from this story, we can learn detachment. The ninth guru is Python. So what does a Python do? Python does not move to search for its food. So whatever comes of its own accord, Python will just grab it and then swallow it. And then Python lives like that. So similarly, an intelligent person does not over-endeavor for material comforts. So one can accept whatever comes of its own accord. So these are all various lessons that we derive from various activities of all these living entities like Python or Pisian and other gurus. But all the activities done by all these people or things may not be relevant, but we need to learn that one particular lesson only. All the analogies may not be universally applicable in all circumstances, but you observe one phenomena and take one lesson from it. So that's how he has learnt a lesson from Python. So Python is swallowing a sheep here, and Python is not going out and searching for food. So the lesson that we need to derive from Python is not meat eating, is not laziness. It is detachment. So we need to observe, our observation should be channelized to derive that one particular lesson only. So next, 10th guru is the ocean. So ocean is undisturbed. Similarly, a saintly person also is very pleasant, is very grave, is very thoughtful. The ocean seems very grave. Similarly, a devotee is also very grave. So also, ocean is very deep. Similarly, a pure devotee is also very deep in one's realizations. And during the monsoon or otherwise also, so many rivers come and meet the ocean. Then the ocean does not get over elated. Ocean is calm and pleasant only. So similarly, although so many difficulties come in the life of a devotee, devotee is always calm and pleasant and sober. And also, in summer, not much water comes on the ocean. But still, the ocean is intact and ocean will not get disturbed in any way. So whether it's during monsoon, so much of water comes in. During summer, not much water comes in. But still, the ocean remains intact. Similarly, in the life of a devotee also, sometimes there could be happiness, sometimes there could be distress. But a devotee is very calm and peaceful and tolerant and sober. So now you can see the example of Ambarish Maharaj. So there is a calamity that came in his life. So in the form of a fiery demon created by Durvasa Muni. But Ambarish Maharaj was not shaken up. And eventually he was protected by Sudarshan Chakra and the Supreme Lord Vishnu himself. So in this way, a devotee is not disturbed by calamities. 11th guru is moth. So moth is an insect that gets attracted to light. You keep a candle there, so many insects come there. So moth gets attracted by the light, the brightness of the light, and by eyesight, and then it goes towards that light and loses its life. You can see when you put a candle in the darkness, so many insects come, and after a while you can see so many dead insects around the lamp, around the candle. So because the moth has attraction, it's so overwhelmed by enjoyment of his eyes, so moth will lose its life. So one sense can also destroy one's life. The eyesight, the eyes destroyed the life of this moth. Now, moth is attracted to the form of light and it lost its life. Now you see a bee is attracted by the fragrance of the flower. So the bee may go and then try to take the fragrance and honey from that flower. And then bee may sometimes, flower petals may close at the time of sunset. And the bee may lost its life. And elephant is attracted by the female elephant, the sense of touch. So because of that, elephant may also lose its life. So now a male elephant is trapped by a female elephant. So the hunter will just keep a female elephant there and the male elephant will just run towards that female elephant. But the hunter had already made a big ditch there and covered the ditch with so many grasses and sticks. The elephant will innocently go there and fall into the trap. So in this way, an elephant is caught because of the weakness of sense of touch. Then a deer is also killed by the deer's attraction towards sound. A hunter may play a flute and then attract the attention of deer. And the fish are caught by hook. The fish is attracted by taste. So now our tongue can distract us. And a human being can be distracted by all senses. Now tongue can distract us, like fish is distracted by tongue. Then deer is distracted by sound. And elephant is distracted by sense of touch. And bee is distracted by fragrance, by nose. And also, this moth is distracted by eyes. So like that, each of these senses can distract us. A human being could be distracted by all five senses. So one has to be sense controlled. That's the lesson. And 12th guru is honeybee. So honeybee collects honey from different flowers. And similarly, a saintly person also can go and beg charity from different places, not one place. If a honeybee is infatuated with the honey within one flower, and the flower's petals will close and the honeybee is trapped within that flower. Similarly, if a saintly person, a renunciant, is attached to taking charity from one donor only, and he could get entrapped by this. Then next, another lesson from B is, one should not accumulate lot of education, lot of knowledge. Now, a honeybee is not distracted by any other element in the garden. In a garden, there could be pathways. In the garden, there could be gazebos and chairs and so many plants and trees, and many varieties are there. But the honeybee will not be distracted by any of these things. The honeybee will just go to a flower and takes honey from that flower. Similarly, there could be so many books, so many literatures are there, but one should be focused on the most important spiritual literatures and study them nicely and get the essence of life from that scriptural study, and then imbibe them, practice them in one's own life and perfect his life and go back to Godhead. But an ass is an intellectual ass, means an ass carries a lot of burden. Similarly, an intellectual, sometimes some people could gather a lot of knowledge from various books, but they may not implement any of those things. They may not convert all that knowledge into realization or wisdom. So they just carry lot of knowledge like asses. So one should focus on the essential knowledge more than just gathering knowledge of different material objects. So now a greedy bee accumulates a lot of honey and then stores that honey in the beehive. But when the bee itself tries to drink that honey, that bee could be bitten by other bees. So one should be satisfied, one should not be so greedy in accumulating so much of wealth. 13th guru is elephant. We have already discussed this. So a hunter traps an elephant by attracting that elephant with a female elephant. So one should also be very careful in one's attraction towards the opposite gender. 14th guru is honey thief. So a honey thief steals honey from the beehive. So a greedy person, just like this honey thief, may accept lot of wealth from others, which the others have accumulated. So bee may struggle so much to gather lot of honey, but all that is taken by honey thief. Similarly, a miserly person may accumulate lot of wealth, but all that wealth could be taken by different relatives and friends and other people. Then, that's why one should not work so foolishly. That's the lesson there. 15th guru is the deer. So the deer gets attracted by the sweet music by some flute player. Then it gets attracted and it gets trapped. And fish can get attracted to that small bait, small flesh piece, which is at the end of the hook, and the fish will just go to take that, and then the fish himself is trapped. So the sense of taste can kill a fish also. So similarly, we need to control one's tongue. The 17th guru is a prostitute named Pingala. So Pingala is a prostitute. Daily she would have sense gratification with so many customers, and she will accept money also. So one day she was waiting for a long time for a customer. And as the people, as men were passing by, so she was saying, oh, this person will come now. He did not come. Oh, that person seems wealthy. He may come now. He also did not come. Like that, this prostitute has been waiting for so many customers, but no one has come that day. So after waiting for a long time, this prostitute, this Pingala, reflected, why am I so obsessed with accumulating money and sense gratification? She was not only doing prostitution for money, she was also deriving sense gratification with all these men. So she thought that the greatest wealth and enjoyment could be given by the Supreme Lord, who is right within my heart. I am aspiring for wealth and enjoyment from ordinary men in this material world, but I should be getting that men, getting that wealth and enjoyment from the Supreme Lord. She speaks this shloka. Santam samipe ramanam ratipradam vittapradam nityamimam vihaya akamadam dukha bhaya adishoka mohapradam tuchhamaham bhajegna santam samipe ramanam ratipradam. So that Supreme Lord Krishna in the form of super soul is right there within my heart. Santam samipe, very close to me. Ramanam ratipradam, he gives me greatest enjoyment. Vittapradam, he also gives me the greatest wealth, supreme spiritual wealth, not material wealth. So I have neglected him and I'm aspiring for that wealth and enjoyment from other people in this world. So she realized that her whole existence is a prostitute and her whole profession is very condemned. She realized that I unnecessarily tortured my soul, this body. I just utilized this body for sense gratification and accumulating wealth. So I will give up this prostitution. So she made up her mind. And I was just hoping that different customers will come and satisfy me and give me money. But nobody has come. So that kind of material aspiration and material hope is the greatest cause of distress. She says in the 44th shloka, Ashahi paramam dukkham nairashyam paramam sukham yatha sanchidya kantasham sukham svapa sukham shushvapa pingala. So ashahi paramam dukham. Asha means hope. I mean, we should not become hopeless, but we should not have false hopes. That's the whole message here. So ashahi paramam dukham, having false hopes that this material world or materialistic people can give me some happiness, is the cause of great distress. So one should not trust a material world. One should not have hopes to become happy with material sense gratification. So ashahi paramam dukham, nairashyam paramam sukham. Nairashyam means detachment. If we have a detached spirit, detached vision, then there is happiness. So in this way, Dattatreya or this Avadhut Brahmana has learned the lesson of detachment from Pingala. 18th guru is Kurari bird. So this Kurari bird once caught a small piece of flesh to eat. But there are huge birds. Kurari bird is like basically hawk. Hawk caught some piece of flesh and at that time some bigger hawks, some huge powerful birds came there to attack this smaller hawk to catch that piece of flesh. So now seeing that, this hawk just left that piece of flesh and then ran away and saved his own life. So from this we need to understand, from this guru, Kurari bird, we need to understand that if we hold on to things that are harmful for our life, we may lose our life. But if we just relinquish those things, noticing a danger, then we can save our life. So that piece of flesh could become the cause of the death of this hawk. So hawk intelligently rejected it. So the lesson that this hawk is teaching us is detachment. So next, 19th guru is a small child. So a child has no worry about family or other relations or no discrimination between honor and dishonor, respect and disrespect. He can just enjoy happily. So similarly, if one is absorbed in spiritual consciousness, one can also be happy like a small child. A small child who is very innocent, he does not have any worries. Elder people, grown-up people have so many worries, but children are quite happy. So seeing that small child, happy child, this Brahmana has learned this lesson, how to be happy. A fool's peace is like that of a dead snow, dead stone, but a devotee is actually happy. Of course, the child could be happy out of his ignorance, but a devotee can become happy out of his absorption in spiritual life and he's deriving happiness from serving Krishna and hearing about Krishna. 20th guru is a young girl. So once there was a young girl, marriageable girl, who is there in her house, who stays in their house, and her parents went outside for some reason. So at that time, some men came to her house and this girl is supposed to be giving them hospitality and giving them some food because they're guests. So now she went inside the kitchen to just do some kitchen work. So now she doesn't have any maid servants. So now these people came there, and this girl is wearing so many bangles. If she herself is doing all the household work, these guests might think that, oh, this girl does not have any servant. We have come to a poor person's house. So then this young girl, when she is doing work, her bangles are making sound. So she removed bangles and she kept only two bangles. And then she is doing that work. And that those two bangles are also making sound. So she took off that one bangle also and kept only one bangle on her hand. And they are not making any sound. And she did household work. And the guests did not understand that she is doing that work personally. So basically, when she was having so many bangles, they were making sound. They were colliding with each other and making sound. So but when all the bangles are separated, only one bangle is there, there is no sound. Similarly, when two philosophers come together, or when multiple intellectuals come together, there could be a lot of collision, and there could be a lot of argumentation and waste of time. So that's why the suggestion is, one should stay away from such mundane wranglers or philosophers who might just argue to prove their own point true. However, this is not applicable to devotees, because jnanis should stay separately. They should not associate with each other, because they are just into mental speculation and argumentation. Such people, if they stay together, then they will just fight with each other. They will quarrel with each other. But devotees are meant to stay together, because now you see another example is there. For example, this poor girl wanted to hide her poverty, so she, although she is personally doing work, she wants to give an impression to the guests that she is not personally doing work. That's why she removed the bangles. But if she were a rich girl, then she need not do that work personally. She need not hide in front of the guests. She may sit there happily with all ornaments. So Bhakti Devi is decorated with so many beautiful ornaments. For example, if this girl were the daughter of a king, so she would be decorated with so many ornaments and bangles. So similarly, devotees are meant to stay together. They will not get into any false argumentation. So they will just agree with each other in terms of the philosophical conclusions, and they accept the Supreme Lord Krishna to be the personality of Godhead, and they agree that everyone has to just perform bhakti unto that Krishna. So in this way, devotees should stay together. So that lesson is meant for jnanis. So next, 21st guru is an arrow maker. So once a king is passing by with his soldiers and ministers and so many musical instruments, and the caravan was passing by, and all the people, citizens on the streets, they watched this king, they were seeing this king. But there is one arrow maker who is very absorbed in making his arrow, and he did not notice the king passing by. So the lesson from here, from this guru, is that you should be absorbed in your spiritual practices. Then we will not be distracted or disturbed by any kinds of distracting elements. Then 22nd guru is a snake. So just like a snake fears attacks from human beings and then stays secluded, similarly a spiritual seeker may become little fearful of getting distracted by materialistic people, and he also stays away from them. Then next, 23rd guru is a spider. So spider creates a web, a big spider web, by its own prowess. Similarly, the Supreme Lord Krishna or Vishnu, he creates millions of universes by his own strength. And the spider can wind up that spider web also. Similarly, the Supreme Lord can withdraw all these universes within himself also. So Lord can create, Lord can destroy. So next, 24th guru is a wasp. So sometimes a wasp can catch an insect and then hold that insect in his trap. So that by constantly meditating on that wasp, this insect also could become a wasp by meditation. Similarly, if we constantly meditate on spiritual subject matters and the Supreme Lord Krishna, we can attain a spiritual body also. So that these are the 24 gurus of this Avadhut Brahmana, from whom he had learned so many lessons just by his intelligence and observation. So his intelligence acted as his own guru. However, with one's own intelligence, if you can acquire a lot of knowledge, what will happen if you go and surrender to a bona fide Vaishnava guru who can teach us great knowledge? So this 24 gurus episode doesn't eliminate the need for a guru, but it will only emphasize that by one needs to carefully observe the phenomena around us and to enhance and assimilate and deepen our understanding on the teachings that we have received from a bona fide guru, right? So then the 25th guru is one's own body. So the jiva accumulates the seed of karma and he attains a material body, and this body can be best guru because it avoids detachment and fine intelligence. One should not waste one's time in overly indulging in this material body. One should actually utilize that body for spiritual practices, human body for that spiritual practices. And there are many other lessons also. So these are the 24 gurus, you know, from whom Avadhut Brahman has learned several lessons. And again, this 24 gurus section indicates that one can become one's own guru, means one can use one's own common sense and intelligence to acquire a lot of lessons and teachings from observing different phenomena in this material world. But one should learn from a guru, and one should learn from a bona fide Vaishnava guru, and that Vaishnava guru may not give spoon feeding to us. He will teach us, but those principles that are taught by guru should be assimilated and understood deeply by a disciple, a sincere disciple, by careful observation and proper analysis by using one's own intelligence. Okay. So we completed 9 chapters today. So in the next episode, we will start from the 10th chapter. Thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.